This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning, folks. Hope you guys are having a great Wednesday morning. So before I forget, I just want to take this time to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, your family, your extended family, to everyone. And we hope that you have a great Thanksgiving celebration, tomorrow morning, and eat plenty. And hopefully enjoy each other's company. And remember that family tops everything else. And it gets pretty easy from there. But we wish you all the best. We got a great show lined up for you today at 12:10. We're going to visit with Walt Leger from New Orleans & Company. He's the president and CEO there. We're going to talk about the multitude of things that are going on in the city. There is no shortage of events to go to. It's absolutely incredible. We'll also talk about some of the most recent recognitions that they have received from not only around the country, around the world, here in New Orleans, what that means to us. We'll talk about the market, the hotel market, luxury end, as well as middle grade and the whole issue relative to hotels in this city. Very important, quite frankly. It's what helps drive our economy in a huge way. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Michael Heck. We'll get our update as to where we are in preparation for the Super Bowl. 74 days away and ticking. It's just going by really quick. We'll visit with the LED Secretary, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary Susan Bonnet Bourgeois. We'll talk about tax reforms from the special session, what that means. How do we market this now? How do we believe that this is going to translate into additional business here? At 10:30, U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy joins us. They were able to move a very important bill, Senate Bill 373, known as the Reinvesting in Shoreline Economies and Ecosystems Act of 2023, RECE. That passed out of his committee with the help of Senator John Kennedy as well from here in Louisiana and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island. It was a bipartisan bill. We'll talk about what that means. I'll also ask him about the AM radio for every vehicle act. It's a really important piece of legislation. It's passed the House. It's sitting in the Senate, as well as the Social Security Fairness Act, something that impacts Louisiana retirees in a big way. That passed the House on a vote of 327 to 75, and it sits in the Senate as well. And we're just very curious as to whether or not in this particular congressional session these bills will get moved. Time is ticking. Not many days left. It'll be interesting to see exactly where these bills stand and the likelihood of them being passed. So I wanted to talk about a couple of things this morning before we visit with U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. The other day, the governor, and I agree with him wholeheartedly on this, was obviously irritated, and he should be, with a video that was, I guess he got a hold of an LSU law professor. And I don't even know how to characterize what he was doing. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me what he was attempting to say or do here. And obviously you could tell by his language himself that he was having a real difficult time trying to kind of sanitize himself while he was making a political statement. His name is Nicholas Briner. He's an environmental law professor and director of LSU's Climate Change Law and Policy Project. And during a lecture on an administrative law course on November 6th, the day after the presidential election, he said the following. I don't know who you all voted for. Some of you in the room voted for Harris. Some voted for Trump. Some of you maybe didn't vote at all or voted for somebody else. But if your vote, I don't mean any of you individually in particular, Now, think about that. But if your vote, I don't mean any of you individually in particular, he knows he's stepping into an area right now that he probably shouldn't be. If you voted for Trump and your rationale for voting for Trump, that you don't like him personally, but that you like his policies, I'll just say that it is on you to prove that by the way you conduct yourself and by the way that you treat other people around you. Because I will say that I hear a lot about how groups of people in the law school, particularly black students, don't feel comfortable in the law school, don't feel welcome here. And so I want you to think a little bit about why that is. And I don't know if anybody falls in that category, but if you voted for Trump on the idea that you don't like him personally, but that you like his policies, I just want you to think about the message that that sends to other people and how you can prove that by treating other people in a way that matches that sentiment. So I think I'm going to leave it there. Again, my job is not to teach you politics. And my job is to teach you about the law. The law is going to change. And administrative law is going to change. I perceive this vote as really like a rejection of the idea that we are governed by a people with expertise. There is a lot in administrative law about ensuring that the government makes rational decisions, right? That's the arbitrary and capricious test. Is the government acting and making rational decisions? Is there space for, you know, reviewing whether government has acted rationally with adequate reasons to support what it's doing? Decisions that are, you know, ideally based on evidence, evidence-based decision-making. But there's a pretty big rejection of that idea that we should be governed by experts, and so I think it's worthwhile to consider that. Now, I'm thinking about that as you go into law school, you know, finish your law school career and go into law practice and how you're going to handle that type of sentiment. Well, you can see that he knew that he was going down a slippery slope because he was always trying to sanitize himself with language. But if your vote, I don't mean any of you individually in particular, but if you voted for Trump and your rationale for voting for Trump, this is absolutely incredulous. And to me, what it is emblematic of a lack of emotional intelligence. Obviously, he's very upset by the outcome of the election. The day after the election, November 6th, he's sitting before a class of young students, obviously many of whom he believes actually voted for Trump. So he wanted to project his frustration and anger about that and basically tried to put those students on a guilt trip and to hopefully cause them to self-reflect over what they were saying, because what he truly meant by what he was saying to these students is that you cannot square this up by saying that you may not like Trump personally and personally the way that he handles certain things, but there are policies that he's advocating that you agree with. Because he's trying to whittle that away by then moving, you know, to the bureaucracy, the bureaucratic state, and trying to say that already he believes, remember, this is the day after, already he believes that there are going to be appointments to be made that are folks that are going to be problematic to his way of thinking. And then, when we have no place else to go, typically, the way this works, we go to race, right? So we're looking out for those that are black in the law school and their sensitivities. Well, I don't know that I need to worry about anybody's sensitivities when I walk into a booth and I vote. Human nature is most people vote in their own best self-interest. Does that mean that I'm insensitive to others? Because if I'm insensitive and they're doing the same thing, doesn't it hold true that it's bilateral and they're insensitive to me? It's almost as if it's impossible to be offended by Democrats. There are a lot of Democrats that hold people up, you know, to be high in stature, who I don't think are worthy of much at all. In fact, a number of which we saw were revealed by the amounts of money that Kamala Harris had to pay these people in order to just sit down with them. They're nothing but a bunch of prostitutes. They're whores. But we hold them up as though they're special people. I'm offended by that. That offends my sensibilities. But never in my wildest dreams did I think that a law school professor should go out there and try to protect the sensibilities of a student relative to the rights and the privileges that we have in this country to vote. So this particular individual wanted to impose on them some additional restrictions and considerations that they should have when they walk into the voting booth. The sensibilities of others. Really? The reason I say this is a lack of emotional intelligence, he's obviously knows that he's on a slippery slope. He shouldn't be talking about it. He even apologizes. But he continues on in a much more subtle way. I would venture to say earlier that evening, he might have been one of those that you saw on Twitter or otherwise who was screaming in the middle of the street, pulling his hair out of his head and maybe slapping himself in the face. Because he even goes on to say that he knows I shouldn't be talking to you about politics. So then why are you? Why can't you control your emotion? You're supposed to be of superior intellect. You're teaching at the public law school in the state of Louisiana. And you're apologizing for what you're about to say, knowing that you're going to say it and it's out of bounds. Now, what's going to be interesting is whether or not the board of the law school, the chancellor of the law school, or any of the folks in leadership position have the chutzpah to do something about it. I doubt it. Because this is ridiculous. Students should not be, and I agree with the governor on this, I don't think the governor's off the rails on this issue at all. I think he is spot on. This is what has been going on in higher education for a long, long time. This is the indoctrinal methodology, strategy with students, causing them to try to feel guilty, to self-reflect, to think that their vote should be in honor of the sensibilities of others within their class. If that's the truth, then why shouldn't that be a bilateral obligation? I'm sure there are many conservatives in that class who were completely and totally offended by what the Biden-Harris administration stood for. Maybe based on their faith, maybe just based on the realities of life. Maybe like I don't believe that the federal government ought to stand between their child and the parent. And maybe, I think it's pretty rational thinking, that the parent knows what's better for the student than the teacher or the administration of a school. Just maybe. I wonder where Nicholas Briner stands on that issue. It's amazing when he talks about experts, too, in their field. Let's just take the case of Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. He's got a lot of expertise in this field. There are a lot of border Democrats that think he is a boondoggle, that the policies of this administration are a boondoggle, that they have created a situation where border cities are going broke, that the whole fabric of the community has been destroyed, and that Hispanics alike came together and voted for a president in counties that historically have never voted for a Republican, ever. How do you explain that away? I guess they run violative of folks in whatever institutions are down there along the border. because they didn't take into consideration the sensibilities of others. It's a perfect example of folks voting in their own best self-interest to live in a community that's safe, secure, a place where you can work, live, and raise a family, and not have to walk around the streets of your community looking over your shoulder. Curious, I wonder if those are sensibilities that we ought to be concerned with as well. But certainly it's not something that we need to go talk about in a law school class. And the reason, you know, the day after is also emblematic of this total lack of emotional intelligence. Cannot control his emotions. Trying to figure out how to come to grip with it. Wanted to let everybody know he's pissed with the outcome. And has to place blame. Well, Professor Briner, maybe you just had a bad candidate who ran a bad campaign that maybe shouldn't have been spending millions upon millions of dollars to pay people that are not experts in their field and don't really know what they're talking about and live in a bubble and don't share the common belief systems of everyday Americans out there, which runs completely contrary to the BS that you're trying to pontificate about in front of your law school students. At the very least, this professor should be compelled to stand before that class and publicly apologize, and to post a letter of apology to the entire student body and the administration of LSU Law School. And if Nicholas Briner does not believe that he can do that, then he should be terminated. Because this is all about the professor's lack of emotional intelligence. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870. On the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, this is Newell on WWL. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by United States Senator Bill Cassidy for the great state of Louisiana. Senator, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you have a great Thanksgiving holiday season. And congratulations on passage of Senate Bill 373 through the U.S. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, otherwise known as the Reinvesting in Shoreline Economies and Ecosystems Act of 2023. I guess it's pronounced the RISE Act. Is that right?
Right.
So let us know as to what this does. I know it means more money for Louisiana, which is a good thing.
Well, we got to finish getting it all the way through, but this is the furthest we've ever gone. And what it is for the listeners, right now, Louisiana and the Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, but mainly Louisiana, we share in the revenue and the royalties from drilling for oil and gas in the Outer Continental Shelf. We use that to rebuild our coastline. What we do with the RISE Act is we increase the amount that Louisiana would receive. We begin to include offshore wind revenue, and although Louisiana would do best, we actually share this revenue with every coastal state, including the Great Lakes, recognizing that there is more people living next to the coast, and the storms are coming, and we're having more damage. So this is the stitch in time saving nine. But, of course, I'm focused on Louisiana, and this would help us tremendously to build resilience.
So this actually kind of changes the formula, right, that was outlined in the Gomesa bill, and this that was kind of what you were just outlining.
Yeah. Under Gomesa, we are limited in terms of there's a cap on how much revenue can be shared with Louisiana or with the other three states. Florida is not included, but the other Gulf states are. And so this would lift the cap, and by lifting the cap, this would give us much more revenue. And by the way, I tell folks, this is not a money grab. This is protecting the U.S. Treasury. FEMA's data shows that for every $1 invested in mitigating risk of flooding, the federal government saves $6 in terms of going back after the fact and cleaning things up. So you put $1 billion down, you're going to save $6 billion. And we're talking Louisiana, but we're also talking around the nation. And we can see from Helene and elsewhere that there's a lot of coastal communities getting battered. So I think this is good for our state, but it's also good for the nation.
Senator, what are your thoughts about the possibility of passage in this in the whole Senate on this bill?
So obviously it helps us that we've got Steve Scalise and Mike Johnson. So we're working very closely. Troy Carter, Steve and Troy have got a similar bill in the House. And so the Louisiana delegation is all in. And so on the Senate side, it'll be included. Our strategy would have to be to get it included in one of the end of the year bills. And so we are working hard on this. There's a lot of politics involved, Newell. Imagine that, politics in Congress. But I think that the dollars and cents play out. The dollars and cents play out in terms of preventing future cost, but it also creates a lot of great paying jobs. These are construction projects, and it creates a lot of jobs in Louisiana and elsewhere. And so I think there's things to recommend it, for somebody who doesn't live on a coast.
Is it something, in your estimation, that has to really get through this process in this session, or does it stand a better chance in the next session?
You know, bird in hand, better than two in a bush. And so
I'm with you, Senator.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's go for it now. And without going into detail, some of the politics work better for the Democratic side this time. And so so you put it all together. And we obviously need Democrats to support it. Troy Carter has been great.
For sure.
But you don't have enough votes to do it as a purely Democrat, purely Republican play. And so we've got to have things in there. And my co-lead is a guy from Rhode Island. And Rhode Island being, a tiny little state on the Atlantic coast, they need help to build resiliency, and this helps them build resiliency. And he's been a good partner.
Senator, I wanted to ask you about two other bills. The AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act, I think that's passed through Senate committee and waits to be scheduled on the Senate floor. Any update on that? I mean, as you well know, that's something very important to radio stations like WWL, and obviously in the event of the storms, because of our reach, 13 or 14 states during the day and up to 30, depending on atmospheric conditions throughout the day. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so first let me say, I didn't care for Joe Biden as a president, but I do like the story that once when we first met, he was a vice president then. And he talked about how he used to listen to WWL, to listen to Billy Cannon. He called him Billy Boom Boom Cannon. I didn't know that was Billy's nickname. But he used to go out into his car, listen to WWL, to listen to LSU football with Billy Cannon. So when you speak about your reach going across 30 states, that comes to mind. I don't know if Schumer's going to bring this up. Schumer is controlling the Senate right now. And so if he brings it up, I think it'll get included in a year-end package. Just one of those things they tuck in. Probably that has a better chance. I can imagine Elon Musk opposing this bill. So because I think, as I understand it, it is the Teslas of the world that don't want to include AM radio. That may have a better chance this Congress. And if Schumer is going to include it, I don't know that.
Yeah, hopefully they do, because I like you. I think the politics align better in this Congress than they may in future congressional sessions. The other bill, the Social Security Fairness Act, I know that you're aware of this. It's one that's near and dear to pensioners in Louisiana. Your thoughts about this bill?
Yeah, so just for people who aren't aware of this, this bill would repeal something called the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. So what's the background? When Bill Clinton was the president, it goes that far back, Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House, they cut a deal to balance the budget. But they did it by cutting Social Security benefits to federal and state employees who, while they were a federal and state employee, didn't pay into the Social Security system. So you're a teacher, you work for 20 years in the state, you become invested, you leave, and you work for 20 years in the private sector. She got cut more than she should have been cut. So she didn't get as many as somebody who worked 40 years in the private sector, but she still worked 20, and she got cut way more than she should have been cut. So it's just unfair, but that's how they ended up balancing it. Well, it comes to light, you know, when people start to retire, wait a second, this isn't good. We're getting totally ripped off on this. The bill you just mentioned, the Social Security Fairness Act, would repeal that provision. Now, the problem, and I'm all for that. I am all for that. The problem is that it's expensive. And so I don't know whether Schumer will include it in the year-end package because you got to pay for it. So how that's going to happen, I don't know. But I am advocating that it include it, and I'm pushing for it. If it doesn't work, I have my own Social Security bill, which I'll bring up next year, in which we would kind of fix all of Social Security and because it's going insolvent and repeal weapon GPO. So put that as part of the bigger picture. So if this doesn't pass, we got a backup plan for next Congress.
Yeah, I know that a number of folks thought it might make it through this Congress, but I'm beginning to believe that's not going to happen. Your thoughts on that?
Not giving up on it. Not giving up on it. It's just expensive, and it's not paid for coming out of the House. And so if it goes to what is called the four corners, you have Schumer and McConnell and Mike Johnson and Hakeem Jeffries, the lead Democrat in the House of Representatives from New York, decide to do it, it can happen. But it's not paid for. And so that's going to be the key thing. And obviously, you'd ideally pay for things.
Yeah, yeah. Final thoughts.
You know, I was just thinking today, Newell, we live in the greatest country in the history of the world. And some folks, you know, complain about our country. There's things to complain about. There's always something that could get better. On the other hand, we are so blessed. We are so blessed. So on this Thanksgiving Day, we can just remember that just as the pilgrims and just as through history, we've just had to sit down and count our blessings. This is a great time for people in Louisiana and Americans in general to just count our blessings.
No doubt about that. And we wish you the best for the Thanksgiving holidays. You guys break for a little while, then y'all come back, in December, and then the session ends?
No, we're back on Monday. I'm here right now in Louisiana, but we go back up on Monday. And we'll be pretty busy all the way up until Christmas. Theoretically, we get out on the 20th. I could imagine it going a little bit longer than that. But we'll be we got a lot of stuff to do in the next 3 weeks.
And there's a lot of stuff coming from the Democrat side that I've seen. It. I don't know how to characterize it. Some of it's crazy, in my view.
Well, they were trying to get a bunch of judges put through. Because we had people like, you know, J.D. Vance is now going to be vice president, Marco Rubio. They were both down with Trump in Florida. And then we had a guy that elected governor of Indiana, so he was in Indiana. So Schumer saw his opportunity and started pushing judges through. And, you know, some of them were just like my friend John Kennedy says, you know, the guy that makes you stand up and announce your pronouns before he'll hear your case should not be a federal judge. And so John has a great way of putting things. And so,
no doubt. So
we got everybody back. And they stopped putting up their federal judges right when the guy from Indiana flew back in. They saw him, and then they struck a deal with us that they wouldn't put any more up on the circuit court. So, you know, they were counting votes, and they didn't think we had them, so we had to rally everybody back.
Absolutely. The games that are played, right, towards the bitter end of every session, for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us, U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. We really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Thanks, Newell. You and yours.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give us a shout. We've got some minutes left. And we'll talk about anything. Stay with us. Well, some people got angered about my monologue. I don't agree with your opinion expressed in your opening monologue. These are law students. Donald Trump and many of his supporters have made it clear they are proud racist, sexist. They don't like traditional experts, and they don't like the law when it doesn't give them whatever they want. and they are willing to break the law with violence. Donald Trump has been bragging he will pardon the January 6th attackers when he officially becomes president. Well, I mean, anytime you get into these generalizations and you start treating everybody as though they're part of, I don't deny that there are both Republicans and Democrats and independents who are racist, who are sexist, and who don't like traditional experts. There's no one party, there's no one group of people, there's no one race, there's no one ethnicity that corners discriminatory beliefs. So I don't think it's fair to throw everybody in the same bucket. He's a law professor. Why is he sitting there preaching to students, to, you know, trying to get them to feel guilty about who they voted for, and then says that they have an additional obligation? They have to prove themselves. Really? Since when? They have to prove that they don't fall within the labels that you so appropriately described. Since when? Is that onus placed on all voters? I don't think so. Obviously, he didn't like what the outcome was. So he decided to go down a path that was incredibly slippery the day after the election. As I said before, the inability to manage one's own emotions, the lack of emotional intelligence. In trying to characterize this as though it was a vote against a particular race and sensitivities of that race. Really? There is a whole lot to pick apart as it relates to the Democrats and the Biden-Harris administration and some of what they did and what they continue to do and what they're doing right now. I found a story yesterday where Bill Wells, the mayor of El Cajon, California, he posted on X Monday that the state of California is threatening to take pensions and charge police officers with felonies if they comply with federal deportation laws. Really? There's a supremacy clause. You take an oath to uphold the Constitution and laws of the United States, the Constitution and laws of this state, and the ordinances of the parish of Jefferson, and I'm sure the oath is the same in El Cajon. In fact, I know officers that worked in El Cajon. I should probably call them. No officer, as the chief says, he says, this is unacceptable. No officer should have to choose between doing their duty and jeopardizing their future. He's right. But California has a law. It's entitled Ice Out of California. Go figure that. So what it prohibits is the following. Immigration holds, make an arrest on civil immigration warrants. You cannot become a 287G department that's a special status with immigration. Asking about immigration status or using immigration agents as interpreters. Sharing personal info with ICE, work, home addresses, or anything else. Notifying ICE of release dates, transfers to ICE, local arrests for criminal violations of immigration law. ICE interviews in jail and prison, can't help them, can't participate in a joint task force, and can't share information from databases. But there's an additional little caveat here. Local law enforcement agents can adopt policies that provide more protections and make it more difficult for ICE to do their job. You want to talk about who's willing and not willing to follow laws, and who's willing to try and circumvent, who's willing to put frontline officers at risk of losing their pensions, being able to support their family and otherwise? They basically all now have lied because they're being prohibited from upholding the Constitution and laws of the United States. How do we square that up? To what end and for what purpose? Who do we have, Coleman? Let's go to John. John, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on. My comment and question is the amount of immigrants coming across the border. How many are college educated? What's the ratio? And kind of tired of getting put in this box of, well, you're not college educated. How could you vote in a rational way? And I'll let you go.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are. I mean, I would very much imagine not many. In fact, the vast majority of those coming across the border don't speak English. And it has been something that has been very difficult for our local educational systems to be able to absorb those non-English-speaking students, ESLs, non-ESLs, and the cost of same. So I would suspect not many. I'm not exactly sure what it is that you're trying to say, but look, people vote their own best self-interests. Doesn't matter how advanced you are educationally. Doesn't matter at all. I mean, people look at things and as how it's going to impact them, their life, their religious beliefs, their social beliefs, how they view the world, how they want to raise their children, and what they think is right or wrong. And a lot of that is carried down from their parents, their grandparents, depending on how strong and the nexus to their familial unit. These are all influencers as to how people vote, right? And, you know, so the manner in which we're going about doing this and trying to place guilt on folks and as if they got something to prove because they voted for someone, I don't have anything to prove. How many times have you gone into a voting booth, held your nose and voted because you don't really like the person, but you agree with the policies? I've actually, as a Republican, not voted for the Republican candidate, held my nose, voted for the Democratic candidate because I just thought they were a better person. So it's hard to place them into one mold, right? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with the Michael Heck, president and CEO of G&O Inc., as well as the Louisiana Economic Development Secretary, Susan Bonnet Bourgeois. So stay with us. We'll be right back.